So, good evening, welcome, glad you're here, glad I'm here too, I like that part. Tonight's official topic is men and women. Yep, they're different. So, I want to let you know, this is how I have to do this, I want to let you know that it will take me some peripheral data to support my point, but I will work directly to the point. And to the best of my ability, I will give you full coverage and the ability to gather the extra information that you need so that you will be filled and complete. And those of you that have heard the workshop before, you'll have a fun time all evening watching as I flip modalities back and forth. So for those of you that haven't noticed, we'll start with the easy part. Even beyond plumbing, which of course is different, but even beyond plumbing, men and women are different. I know that's a stunning thing to some of you. It's interesting, there's Alison Armstrong. Alison. If I can't get her name right, at least get her website right. www.celebratingmen.com. I think it's Armstrong. One of her comments is, and I just fell in love with it, so I figure I got to credit it if I'm going to quote it. She said, "For the longest time, we all thought we were the same. And so women just thought men were bigger, stronger, hairier women being rude on purpose. And men thought that women were smaller, softer, less strong men with an amazing amount of emotional indulgence." And, oh, good reminder, thanks so much. If you've got cell phones, pagers, small children, other noisemakers, set them to silent or personal pleasures, or go throw them out the door and never pick them up again. You hope. Okay, cool. So it became interesting along the way, because for a while I couldn't have done this workshop because it was so politically incorrect that there's a certain gender who was establishing their place in the world that would have lynched me. Because they were busily establishing that men and women were the same. Which became cute when later they figured out they weren't the same, and the first industry they took on was the medical industry, which is the slowest moving consciousness on the planet, short of politics. I mean, you guys know that about medical industry, right? Like, 35 years ago, they measured cholesterol in eggs wrong. Before they knew about cholesterol, and they declared that eggs were dangerous because you'd have heart problems if you ate them. Within the last week or two, which is closer to 15 years, they remeasured the cholesterol in eggs, found out that there's one-third the amount that was originally measured, and I don't think chickens changed that much. But what they found out was that there's way more good cholesterol than there is bad cholesterol, and there's enough lecithin that it actually breaks down more bad cholesterol than it gives you. So you remember the old thing about celery? It takes more calories to chew it than you get from the celery? Eggs actually improve your overall cholesterol intake, particularly, get this, particularly if you eat the yolks. Now, that doesn't count eggs that have been basted in bacon fat. That's a different scenario. But eggs themselves, and so that's been 15 years that they've had that research and that research has been solid, and you'll notice how quickly the medical industry caught right up with that. They still say, well, we think it's safe for you to have one or two eggs a week. That wouldn't hurt you too much. Okay, so anyway. So the feminists took on the medical industry saying, hey, you did all this drug testing on male bodies. Girl bodies are different. And actually, I'm really thrilled. This last 4 months ago, they finally brought out a female artificial knee. You guys have no idea what huge news that is. They haven't done a hip yet. But female knees are built different because female hips are built differently. And so you put a male artificial knee in a female body and it doesn't line up right. So it's a thrilling thing that they brought out female artificial knees finally. They're recognizing that, I mean, how stunning. Doctors have figured out there's a difference between men and women. And there is. So I work intuitively, that's what I do. And because I am primarily a clairsentient, okay, there's clairvoyant, clair is in clear, voyant is in visual input. Clairaudient, clair is in clear, audient is in audio input, which doesn't also necessarily mean that the picture or the audio is, you know, drive 3 yards and turn left. You know, not like, it's not like my Garmin. Sometimes it could be a sound that you then have to understand that audio sound interprets to be this. Well, I'm clairsentient, which is clairs and clear, sentient as in both sensing, so I pick up lots of stuff. Another word is empathic, but it's not quite as strong a word. I pick up lots of stuff in my body to sense it from the people around me. There's several of you in the room that are very familiar with this. And I also just know things. You know, so sometimes, like, if you had to show your work on a test, that was really a drag because all I knew was the answer. I had no idea how I got there. I still live that way. So when I'm working with people, periodically during my working with them, I go in state first, which means I have an engineering degree. I was trained to be an engineer. My dad's an engineer. My brother's an engineer. I have an engineering degree. My dad met my mom teaching her math in college, upper level math. My granddad was technically based. My great granddad was a watchmaker, you know, which is pretty left brain. So I was raised to be an engineer. And I have deviated a little. One study of power to another. So I have this engineering degree, but I go in state, which means I shift out of that left brain, I'm more in my right brain, I'm dialed into my intuitive, and then I link up. These are my verbs. It's the only ones I've got. Well, when I go into link or I link up, I actually am the client, as well as my own perspective, and I lost count at something over 10,000 people that I'd done readings for, and that was a lot of years ago. So I'm well over 10,000 different perspectives that I've gotten to be inside of. Not hear from the outside, but be inside of. And so some years back, when it was really politically incorrect, God bless John Gray, he did a lot of groundbreaking on this topic and took a lot of heat for it. I watched him almost get lynched on Oprah one day. Oprah literally, with an arm across him and the other hand out to the audience, he's trying to help us, ladies. He's trying to help us. But the funny part about John is he understands girl speak, but he doesn't speak girl. So he frequently has that response from his audiences and the female parts. So way before it was politically correct, I had noticed things when I would be in link with women clients, like particularly if I was jarring loose a memory so that we could track where a psychological idiom had come from. Sometimes I want to know where it came from. We need to know the memory. I need to have that surface. And so I would notice that if I was linked up with a female client and I went to look at memories, the guys are going to find this amazing, the women are not going to hear anything for the next few seconds except wah, wah, wah. I would notice when I was hooked up with a female client and I went to look at a memory, I would get this full-blown movie that I could pan and zoom and change angles of view. Guys, you get this? Their memories would play like the Super Bowl, where the Super Bowl has 17 cameras and you can see it from any angle you want to see it, and you can backward it, you can forward it, you can even slow it, and it's movies. You hit the button and it's movies, and there's a search function. I need the part of the movie where Dad shows up. There's Dad in the memory. It's very cool. Because see, ladies, the reason that caught my attention was guy memories don't work that way. Everybody breathe, please. I'll ask you to do that every time the room turns to concrete. Okay, guy memories don't work that way. Trust me, I have one. Well, then how do you know about girl memories? I've been in them. Yeah, we'll skip that story. Thanks. Yeah, I had to check. You know, if you've ever been to the like old-fashioned penny arcade kind of things, and they've got the machine where you drop in your coin, and then you look through the eyepiece, and you turn the handle, and photos go tick, 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 and if you get the rhythm right, it kind of looks like a movie, but you're still very aware that it's, yeah. The guys are already starting to grin, yeah. Guy memories are still photos. They're not movies. They're still photos. They're snapshots. And if we want to see a series, we have to through the snapshots. Now, what's more entertaining, that's jumping ahead. So I started to notice that difference when I was inside various people's brains and the fact that I had guy clients and girl clients. Okay, for all of you that are offended with any particular word that belongs to any particular gender, just plan on being offended and I'll apologize now and then we'll quit doing that, okay? So just plan on being offended and you're already apologized to, and here we go. So guy memories were different than gal memories. And I got very familiar with the fact they were different, still thinking it was me and that the psychic stuff was just, you know, insanity, which I wonder on a daily basis. I do. But I noticed this difference, and I thought it was just me noticing the difference. So y'all can't imagine what a relief it was when I started to run into the beginnings of the research on the brain differentials between the genders. And there's been little fragments of girl memories different than guy memories, but there's been some other really groovy stuff. One of the first pieces I ran into was they were doing brain activity mapping. And I have a tendency, I think lots of the best science happened when they set out to prove something else. I mean, sometimes it's not as obvious as the group that set out to prove that prayer has no effect on healing. That was what they set out to prove. And so they took a whole bunch of surgery patients that weren't church affiliated, and they divvied them up, and half of them they had people in churches that had never met these people pray for them. They made it as hard as they could. And the other half they had nobody pray for them because they weren't church affiliated. And their first experiment went horribly haywire. Because all of the people that were prayed for, somehow they had accidentally picked all the people that wouldn't have any surgical complications and would heal faster. So they threw out the first research because the results were flawed. And they redid the research with a larger group to get away from that flaw, and they made certain in their interviews that all of their surgery candidates were non-church affiliated. And then they divvied them up, and they had the group pray, you know, they had a couple of churches pray for the people they'd never met, and nobody prayed for the other group, and they came up with a slightly larger differential the second time. The people that were prayed for had statistically significantly fewer post-surgical complications, faster healing, faster recovery time, faster out, Now, that's one of those cases where they set out to prove one thing and they accidentally found out that they were mistaken in their assumption. But lots of good science happens by accident, like the 3M research scientists that went to find a more permanent glue and accidentally invented the glue that you now know of as the active agent on Post-it notes. The opposite end of a more permanent glue, they found a glue that would stay glue forever but would never stick. Which was really kind of cool because they took it to marketing and they said, we think there's a lot of applications, and marketing said, yeah. And so the research and development guys came up with the idea of Post-it notes, which is brilliant. And then somebody came up with the idea of, let's get a mailing list for executive secretaries. And they did. And then they took and they made small batches of Post-it notes and mailed them to all the executive secretaries with an order form. And when they sent back their order form, because all of their friends wanted some of these Post-it note things, they filled those orders until they were getting so many order forms back that the R&D group couldn't keep up with it in their spare time. And then they went in with this big stack of orders. They walked into marketing and said, we think there might be a market. And marketing said, we're brilliant. We'll market this stuff. And now it's like a significant percentage of 3M's income, all because somebody goofed when they set out to make a more permanent glue and somebody else thought of something to do with that accident. So I tend to think that lots of our best and most surprising and interesting research happens when they were trying to do something else. So one of the first pieces I bumped into in this area was they were doing brain mapping. Stick your head in a machine when you still own it. Stick your head in a machine and like, make your brain be busy and then track where the activity is. And what they found was when they gave and my understanding is what they were doing was brain mapping. Where do we cogitate? Where do we think? Because it turns out we don't know much about this thinking stuff, which many people who drive in California demonstrate. just my view. If I'd have seen that one coming, I would have stopped it. So I think they were just brain mapping, where does cognitive activity happen? You know, where does it go? Because earlier they'd done some fun brain mapping when they were doing open brain surgery, and you know, they'd like stick a probe in and find out that if you touch a brain here, it does this, and if you touch a brain there, it does that. And there's some really famous research where it was, the guy used to sing in bars a lot, and they found that if they touched his brain in a certain place with a, God knows, they're doing something supposedly medical, but they're in the, you know, it's guys. Ooh, let's play with this. Right? Guys. Okay? So they like, yo, look, if we touch here, and he would burst into this one song. And they'd release, and he'd stop singing, and they'd touch, and he'd start over at the beginning, and they'd release, and he'd stop, and he'd touch, and he'd start over at the beginning. You know, and God knows how many times. It's guys, right? Hey, come on, check this out. You know, here, you do it. So they started to find that different brain function happened in different locations, which was previous to the machines that watch everything light up. So they were doing the cognitive research, and they posed a contemplative question to the subjects to watch what their brains did. And what they found, I believe by accident, was that when they posed a like computational question, or even a, you had to really think about it, a logic question, when they put a male brain in the machine with a male operator, male owner, and gave them a logic question, they would see brain activity all over the brain, and gradually the brain activity would localize down to a single area of the brain, and then the subject would say, I've reached a conclusion. I have my conclusion, and they'd present it, whatever they did with it. Imagine their surprise when they would put a female brain person, owner, in the machine and pose a computational question. They would see brain activity in a relatively small area of the brain that would gradually expand until it was brain activity all over the brain. And then when they were seeing brain activity everywhere, the female client would say, I've reached a conclusion. It's very important to start right there, because one of the things we're going to talk about tonight is the fact that words don't all mean the same thing across gender gaps. A male conclusion, ladies, the guys already know this, a male conclusion is, you can watch the guys in the room. Guys, please, if you don't agree with what I'm saying, make it really vivid, so that if you're sitting there going, they'll know that that was, yeah. Because if women were doing it, they'd be going, yes, I agree, absolutely, yes, don't you? Yes, I do. You know, guys don't do it that way. Guys will be going, that was it. That was exactly right on, totally complete, I completely agree, I took the whole thing in, I got it. Right, guys? That was it. It's a whole thing, that's all we need. Because see, a male conclusion, yeah, I'm going to spin you out even further than this. A male conclusion is discharging all unnecessary peripheral data to form a linear logical chain to a singular point. And you'll notice that, ladies, you'll notice you've observed that before. You just thought we were wrong when we did it. and we'll talk more about that. But you'll notice it reflects what they saw in the brain mapping. Lot of activity all over the brain, less and less, till finally it's a single area of the brain that's activated. I've reached a conclusion. See, there's this piece of us in our brain that somewhere way back when it was important to do things in Latin, they named it the corpus callosum. Corpus is body kind of thing. I have no idea what callosum is. But they named it the corpus callosum, and it sits up here somewhere, like right under the bald spot place. The corpus callosum is the telephone networking of the brain. It's the inner link of the brain. Now, sometime back, a researcher at Stanford started doing research in about brains after people were done with them, so she'd take them out and take them apart. And she came up with some radical, horrible notion. And so a large group of our population, like one gender, set out to have that researcher shut down because that was what she was claiming was so wrong. And eventually, you know, they got her grants taken away. That's my favorite part. The feminist attacked a female that was doing great research. But eventually she got enough grants back to do the research, because what she found when she took brains apart was that, and again, my understanding is this was an accidental finding. She was just taking brains apart and then noticed this. That corpus callosum thingy in female brains is heavier and larger in size than it is in male brains. Now, that's not to say that, you know, male brains that have the smallest ones are smaller than female brains that have the biggest ones. No, it's like a distinct dividing line. You know, sort of like the difference between a package of steaks at Safeway and a package of steaks at Costco. You know? You can have the larger or smaller package of steaks at Safeway, but it's not going to be anywhere near the smallest package you can get at Costco, much less the big pack. Did that work? Cool. Okay. Distinct difference, because not only is the female corpus callosum larger in size than the male corpus callosum, but it's also denser, more densely packed with transmission cables, nerve tissue. By a factor of like I keep wanting to say 100, and I'm sure that's just too big. So I'll say at least 10 times as much. So if you thought of it as, you know, I'm hooked up to the phone company with my DSL line, and the DSL line can have, we'll just pretend, 10 copper wires per square inch, and I've got 1 square inch of cable, so I can send as much signal as you can send on 10 copper wires. I know it's all math, sorry. The female brain is hooked up, sorry, to the cable company. But it's not a 1 inch cable, it's a 2.5 inch cable, and it's not copper wires, it's fiber optics, so that not only is it bigger, but there's 10 times as many wires per space. So you do the math, and you find out that 10 times as much in a bigger thing means way more. That's the official topic. The corpus callosum in the female brain is more than 10 times as connective as the male brain, because it's bigger and 10 times as much cable per inch. So it's like 200 times as much. That's a lot, or at least 20 times as much. It's a gaggle. It's a bunch. So what we've got is male brains, we experience our brain with two parts to it. And I'm going to label them here to stay out of the right and left. It coordinates with right and left, but it's more vivid if I label it as analytical and experiential. And there's a hallway in between. I know some of you ladies are starting to feel sorry for us. There's actually usefulness to this. But there's a hallway in between, and y'all have seen that. Because ladies, you know how my team watches television. We fall completely in, and we're tunnel vision. And if you talk to us, there'll be a time delay. Our eyes will roll up. They'll come back in focus, and we'll turn to you as if we just now found out you're in the room and say, brilliantly, huh? Because we didn't hear what you said. We heard, wah, 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 wah. And we recognize that that was a sound signal that said we were supposed to be present in the analytical part of our brain that has the translation mechanism for verbal communication. Now, it gets a little tricky, but hang with me. So we have to go up the hall, because in the TV, and I don't care, we do understand the dialogue in the TV, but it's one enclosed experiential package. Whereas your dialogue is separate, unless you're, like, you know, saying the same dialogue, in which case you don't care if we respond. All right? So we have to come up the hall into the analytical part of our brain to find out what those sounds you're making translate to as words. And you've watched us do it. We're lost. You speak. We register you spoke. Our eyes kind of roll up in our heads. And then they come back focused, and we turn. We look at you like you're a brand new thing. And we say, huh. Which is the signal for, pardon me, I was fully in my experiential mode, I registered, you were wishing my attention, I have returned now in order to attend to the value and importance of your words. But that's way too long. It's much easier to say that all as, huh? And then you repeat what you said, and we respond as if it's the first time we heard it, and you think, what, are you stupid? No, we were down the hall. A female conclusion. You remember the male conclusion, right? Discard peripheral data, get to the point. Because we can only haul one file at a time from experiential to analytical. One folder. And that becomes more important in a minute. We can only haul one folder at a time from experiential to analytical. So we go back and forth between experiential, analytical, until we recognize, okay, I've got my conclusion. We haul that conclusion file into analytical, and we present it on the input-output devices. Speech, typing, whatever it may be. Boom. Female conclusion is more aptly defined as full coverage. Everybody breathe, please. A female conclusion is more aptly defined as full coverage. What do I mean? We'll go to the easiest joke. Ladies, if there's two women in the car, one of them driving, and you realize that you have misplaced yourselves and you're not sure of your route, What is it that women think should be done at that point?
Ask for directions.
Stop someplace and ask for directions. Suppose there's three different people that look intelligent at the place you stop for directions. How many of them will the two of you ask? Yes, she says all three of them. One of you will ask the person that works there, one of you will ask the other person, and then the first one or one of the others, as soon as they've got that, will ask the third, and then you'll coalesce that data with what the two of you know and choose how you're going to go. Well, he said take the highway, but he said we could get surface streets. I don't like the highway. I've been on that highway, but these surface streets are dangerous. So you'll gather all of the available data until you have full coverage. Then you'll drive. Or maybe you're driving while you're completing full coverage, and you'll probably be continuing to review your full coverage even while you drive till you get there. Good chance. You got it? Who's the expert? Who wrote the book? Where do I find out? What does Oprah say? Has Dr. Phil spoken on it? Whose book is the top book? And what do all of my friends think? And until I have all of that, do I have a conclusion? I've kind of got a work in progress. If I'm forced to state a conclusion, I'll even qualify it. Well, I haven't really checked with everyone, but from what I've found out so far, right? This is why men think you're crazy. Guys, you don't have to nod on that one. Stay safe. And it gets deeper. Men, it's the discarding of peripheral data to reach a single logic chain to a point. Women, it's full coverage. Now, there's a very important piece that I want to mention here. Ladies, it's really important for you to know. Men establish their internal sense of esteem and place in life. And place in life is very important to us. Okay, that's why we have all the markers. You know? The privilege of not wearing a necktie, or the status of wearing a necktie, the Ferrari, the Porsche, the big house, the huge pile of Coke, or the $20,000 watch. Place in life is very important to our team. Okay? Men establish their sense of esteem and their place in life based on their evaluation of their ability to form successful logic chains to successful conclusions. Men establish their sense of esteem and worth and their place in life, which is very important to them, based on their evaluation and their history of, thought I was going to be able to sneak that in.